coming up on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast.
It's just exciting where we've come from where we've been in just such a short period of time.
Dr. Nirvana Manning of the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS describes how their new postpartum call center is reaching out to new moms across the state. Then Leah Wasson with the Doula Alliance of Arkansas will discuss support for new moms in the postpartum period.
People talk about birth plans all the time, but you never hear about postpartum plans, and we should have a plan for a postpartum because it's hard. Mm-hmm.
And we'll explore coverage transitions in the postpartum period with Craig Wilson at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement.
We've got to help them navigate the system in a way that makes sure that they have that continuity of care, not just for themselves, but for the health of the child as well.
Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, a series where we explore the data and issues behind maternal and infant health in Arkansas. I'm your host, Sandra McGrew. I'm the executive director at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, also known as ACHI. We are an independent health policy center focused on evidence-based research, analysis, and collaborative efforts to improve the health of all Arkansans. We pulled our analysts and researchers together to envision what a healthy birthing journey should look like and identify points along the way where our state has opportunities to make lasting improvements for our moms, children, families, and communities. We identified 9 phases along the birthing journey from pre-pregnancy through delivery and into the postpartum period. In this episode, we explore the 8th phase, postpartum visits. Between 2018 and 2022, most pregnancy-related deaths in Arkansas occurred during the postpartum period. 36% of severe maternal morbidity events, those unexpected outcomes of labor and delivery that can result in significant short or long-term health consequences, occur more than 6 weeks after a mother leaves the hospital. If we want to improve health outcomes for Arkansas moms, the postpartum period is a very critical time. And that process often begins with postpartum health visits following the birth of a child. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists recommends that a new mother undergoes a comprehensive postpartum checkup, ideally within the first 3 weeks postpartum, or at least no later than 12 weeks after birth, and that they continue to receive medical care during the postpartum period. Let's learn about a new effort to actively reach out to postpartum moms in our state, regardless of their ability to see a doctor. Dr. Nirvana Manning of the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences joins us to discuss their new proactive postpartum call center. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Manning. We really appreciate you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Over the past year, the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS launched a new program to call postpartum mothers. Tell me, how did this come about and how does it work?
I would love to. You know, this all started with a congressional earmark from Senator Bozeman. He approached us and said, infant mortality in our state is terrible. How can you fix it? And I said, well, I'm not the foremost expert in infant, but I would argue it starts upwards from the infant. It starts with the mom. It starts with the family. He said, give me a proposal. And so we put together kind of a 3-tiered proposal under this UAMS, Arkansas Center for Women's and Infants Health. It's one tier of it is standardizing the education, making sure that every mom that leaves a labor and delivery unit in our state gets the same maternal warning signs, infant warning signs, the same basic education such that it doesn't depend on who your provider is or who you are or where you're delivering. We standardize that. And with that, we've been giving the infant supply kits as well, which is some niceties that kind of get them going. Diapers, wipes, vitamin D, all those good things. The second tier of this is the I gave birth bracelet. It is a visual reminder, not only for the patient and the family, but for EMS and emergency providers, that this woman is unique in this immediate postpartum period. And I give the example of, you know, if a person presents in an ER with a blood pressure of 140 over 90, I don't care. But if they're pregnant, I really care. And so it identifies them as this uniquely postpartum. So take some things seriously that you would not otherwise. On that bracelet is also a QR code that leads to our website. That's myarkansasbirth.org. And so not only the family, but the patient can scan that at any time. And there's a huge plethora of resources, including like trouble breastfeeding. I'm having, you know, these symptoms. What do I do? And all the way to, if I can't get a provider, I can do a telemedicine. And then the third part of this, which I'm so excited about, is this proactive postpartum call center. So call centers are not unique, but usually we leave the burden of calling on the family and the patient. And so we wanted to kind of flip the script and make it such that no one had to feel less than for calling. So we proactively call all the women in our state between 7 and 10 days postpartum. We start on day 7 from discharge. If they don't answer, we call on day 8, we call on day 9, and we call on day 10. If they still don't answer on day 10, we actually send them a text that say we would love to come and do a home visit. And so we have a home visiting program just to ensure that they get the safety. But, you know, I think about it. If someone were to cold call me, if I don't know that number, I'm not going to answer it. Mm-hmm. But we have done such, this team has done such great work. We have a between 70 and 80% call answer rate. So these women not only are answering the calls, they're going through this questionnaire. They are wanting the help. We go through some very predetermined healthcare questionnaires, you know, bleeding, infection, things in the immediate postpartum period, as well as some social determinants of health. Do you have diapers? Do you have formula? Are you breastfeeding? Do you need help? Do you have housing? Do you have food? And then we ask if they have Medicaid. And if they have Medicaid, we ask them if they want help with the reapplication process. And so we then do a soft handoff to a community healthcare worker that it may be Medicaid, it may be something off the exchange, but we help them ensure that they have coverage in that postpartum period, because we find that part of the issues that we have with mental health and resources is lack of coverage. And so if they don't have coverage and Medicaid ends at 60 days or the end of that month, we lose them until the next pregnancy. So some key things like preventative care, contraception, mental health, we lose the opportunity to give those people.
Is this just for mothers who deliver at UAMS?
Nope, this is statewide. So we started at UAMS because I can control it, and we wanted to figure out what we didn't know. And then we had a health summit, invited all of our hospitals around the state. And so we have agreements. Currently, we have 7 additional hospitals on board, and 21 have signed MOUs and BAAs. So we are actively onboarding. And so there are a few other hospitals left, and we hope with the next roundtable we'll be able to engage with kind of their leadership and be able to get them. And they can do all or none of it. You know, we have hospitals that already have some kind of bracelet initiative. And if that's the case, by all means, like if it works for you, we are not pushing our agenda on there. We have funding. We are able to do this, and we would love to partner with them. But if there is some part of this that they do that they want to continue to do, we can do any and all of it. And so it's been really fun engaging with the hospitals. And part of what we do when we onboard them is ask them, where do they want us to send their patients? What do they want the dispositions? Because our goal is to refer them right back into these communities. We want them coming back to their hospital. We want them utilizing the resources that they have. And so part of the onboarding is, you know, who do you like for lactation? Who do you want? Who are your community healthcare workers? And so that is part of the script with our nurses, and they will refer them right back into those communities.
We know that the majority of maternal deaths take place during the postpartum period, more than a third occurring between 6 weeks and a year after delivery. And you talked about some of the questions that folks at the center ask, part of the training too, are there certain things that they're also listening for in addition to just the answer to those questions? Are there other things that they're actively listening for during those conversations?
Absolutely. And, you know, we have nurses on the line. So the level of education we hope will pick up some of those subtleties in them. And that is where, if they didn't answer, that home visit really comes into play. Now, some people just don't answer. And by the time they get that text that says we're coming, they're like, oh, gosh, don't come. But others, and we have every Friday, we have success stories, and it's literally makes my day. But there was a family that we did a home visit, and you could tell that she was struggling. And so we were able to go in there and just be able to surround not only her, but the family with other resources. And I think that is what it's the people part of it, and it's the connecting people with what we've got in the state. We really have some great resources in the state, but there's not great line of sight a lot of times on where does that person go immediately next when they need the help. And so it's kind of bridging those gaps and creating those connections. And even further out, like you mentioned, you know, we call them 7 to 10 days. So what happens after that? Well, that's where the community healthcare workers, that's where a postpartum doula, that's where some of the other people that can help surround these patients really help kind of follow up on a regular basis and make sure that these families are doing okay. In addition to the calling, we're sending texts to them at a regular interval all the way to that 6-week part that's just like breastfeeding and just resources and where to go. You know, we also have this Pregnancy Plus app in the state that's really specific to Arkansas. And so we've teamed up with that group so that all of these pieces are kind of talking in a seamless way. And it's just exciting where we've come from where we've been in just such a short period of time.
I think it also shows what can be accomplished when we're working together.
Yeah. Yeah. When we're all swimming in the same direction.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us,
no,
Dr. Manning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Nirvana Manning is an OBGYN and leads the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. You can learn more about the Proactive Postpartum Call Center and their other programs on their website. That's at myarkansasbirth.org. Groups and organizations across Arkansas have rallied around efforts to improve maternal and infant health outcomes in our state. One underutilized resource that has become central to many of those conversations is the doula. Doulas are trained professionals who provide physical, emotional, and informational support to mothers and families during the birthing journey. That support can also include the postpartum period. To learn more about the role of doulas in the postpartum period, I'm joined by Leah Wasson. She's the executive director and a founding board member of the Doula Alliance of Arkansas. Welcome to the podcast, Ms. Wasson. It's so nice to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Before we dive into the postpartum support for moms, tell our listeners about the Doula Alliance of Arkansas.
The Doula Alliance of Arkansas is the professional development organization for doulas across the state. We were established in 2024, and we were really founded on the basis of establishing what is now Act 965, so the Medicaid and private insurance reimbursement for doulas. But with that, our successful legislative session, now there's a lot of work that needs to be done for doulas across the state as we move into this new realm of work. And so that is what we're here for. But we're also here bridging gaps in the community across not only medical providers, but within the community. So community-based organizations, grassroots organizations, other nonprofits that are seeing moms, babies, and families. And then we're volunteering. We're dueling the community. So we do like a monthly park cleanup at Butler Park in Little Rock. We've partnered with some of the community-based organizations like Arkansas Women's Outreach to do like packing parties for menstrual kits and postpartum kits. I like to consider myself like the doula for the doulas, just standing in between the state and everybody that that's learning about doulas right now, and then the doulas that are actually out here doing the work.
What has interested you in this? How did you get into this space?
Oh, well, I feel like I'm like in between worlds right now. So my doula journey began with the birth of my first son. Everybody always has like a story that comes from birth. That's what birth is. You birth a new person in yourself, I think. And so with me, with my first baby, part of what was birthed was a doula. And I never got into this work thinking that I would step into politics and legislation at all. Nobody becomes a doula because that's what they want to do. It's like the exact opposite of what you're looking to do in this work. You're looking to serve moms and families. But I did know well before DAR was even established that I wanted to help bring Medicaid reimbursement for doulas to Arkansas. I wasn't sure how I would do it. I just ended up at the right place at the right time. And here I am now.
Yeah. You know, we've seen widespread adoption of certification and reimbursement for doulas, of course, across the country over the past few years. Now that we have this statewide focus on maternal health issues here in Arkansas and that legislation to support the role, can you dive a little bit deeper about how the legislation is supporting doulas and how that is impacting your work right now?
Yeah, so we know there were a lot of wins with healthy mom, healthy babies from doulas, CHWs, lactation, unbundling care. So we're really grateful for all of that. Again, we had HB 1252, which turned into Act 965, and that was a huge win, again, for people who did not like ever dream that they would be a part of politics. You know, we did not plan on getting in this world. There was also some losses. So like the postpartum Medicaid did not get extended. And that does directly impact our work as doulas. We're here to talk about postpartum doulas and postpartum work. So there's all of that. But I would also say that for me specifically, I've shifted from being a practicing doula, stay-at-home mom, a homeschooling mom, to now I'm executive director of this nonprofit organization. So it's really shifted as far as like administrative work. And that's actually what we're about to see a lot for the doulas. That is my role, is to help the doulas prepare for that, the administrative tasks that are about to come on. Because doulas become doulas because they want to serve families. Not because they want to file claims and, you know, do all of the paperwork. And that's something that's about to be a big shift in the scope of practice of our work. That's not laid out in legislation. That's not included when we're thinking about compensation, but it's going to be a big part of it. Yeah. So
in an earlier episode, we explored the role of doulas in supporting Arkansas moms during pregnancy and childbirth. How does your work change as moms transition into that postpartum period?
I love postpartum doulas. I am not a postpartum doula. I'm a labor and delivery or a prenatal doula, but I did have a postpartum doula for my fourth pregnancy, and she was a godsend. I tell people all the time that she saved my life, quite literally. And that is what postpartum doulas are doing. So they're really coming into the home. When you think of, I think, pregnancy, labor, doulas, you really think about their role in the hospital. But when I think of postpartum doulas, I think about their role in the home, working with the family, doing what I think is most important and what a lot of us don't do in the postpartum, which is holding the mom and carrying the mom through this big life transition. There's kind of these stereotypes of pregnancy where the mom is like glowing and, you know, everybody's like, oh, don't do anything. Don't lift a finger. Right. I will pamper you and take care of you. And then there's this stereotype of postpartum that's really scary. And like mom's got like spit up on her shoulder and her hair is unbrushed. And that's reality for a lot of us.
Yes.
Neither of those are 100% realities for anybody. I know people who have had terrible pregnancies and people who have had amazing postpartums where they just like get back out in the world. But those are kind of what we see in the media a lot, I think, and like the ideas that we see uplifted. And so postpartum doula comes into your home. She's prepping food so that mom is eating instead of just focusing on feeding everybody else. They might do a little bit of light house cleaning. They might hold the baby so you can take a shower and not have to worry about the ghost cries. My favorite time to have my postpartum doula was after my husband went back to work because we don't have paid parental leave. So he took a couple weeks off. And then afterwards, he had to go back out and I was on my own with four kids. And so I would say doulas as a whole help you center your values. That's what I love to do as a doula. And so if I can center my values for my postpartum and I know that I value peace. So part of my postpartum plan, people talk about birth plans all the time, but you never hear about postpartum plans. And we should have a plan for postpartum because it's hard. So if I know that I value peace, maybe I put a sign on the door, you know, not to ring the doorbell when you come over. Or I have a schedule of when I want to allow visitors over. And I have things, my expectations of those visitors when they come over. Don't just come over and ask to see the baby and watch me feeding the baby until you can hold the baby. Come over and while you're waiting, can you like switch around a load of laundry? Can you warm up the food in the fridge? Like just pop it in the microwave? You know, like your postpartum doula really helps you think ahead about those things while also being a level of support and care, again, in the home, who's coming to you and checking on you, looking you over, making sure that you're well. Are you well?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. What are the signs that you tell doulas to look for? Because like you said, I mean, it really can look different for everyone, but what are kind of the main things that you discuss?
We just partnered with UAMS and they're pushing out this perinatal mental health certification. And so we shared that across our doula membership. We're training doulas on things like food resources, social determinants of health. That's like a big, like, term that people are using right now, but of course it's nothing new. It's getting the resources to the people, you know, what to look for as far as signs and symptoms of postpartum eclampsia or you know, any physical concerns, but also just the mental, emotional health, and then ensuring that that family has the appropriate resources. Because what I've been preparing the doulas for as we step into Medicaid reimbursement, we're shifting a lot of us from private pay clients, so clients who are paying $1,500 out of pocket cash for doula services, to people who are relying on Medicaid, you know, and so there's going to be different resources that are needed for each of these people. If I don't know how I'm going to eat at the end of the day, how I'm going to pay my rent for next month, I don't even know if I'm going to have a home to take my baby to, then I'm not really focused on the breastfeeding basics, you know? So those are different resources needed. And so a lot of the training and continued education is about that. How do you support these families through all of these different phases of life so that they can continue being a unit? How can we keep families together?
What are some of the conversations like when you're telling people what doulas do? Is there anything that surprises you or surprises them?
Oh, I don't know that I ever walk away from a conversation talking about doulas where someone is like, I learned more about doulas in this last 5 minutes than I knew before. And I always just encourage people to have conversations with the doulas in your area because there's so much more than what's encompassed in our legislation and our scope of practice and what you're going to see on paper. Doulas are working around the clock with our families, and we want to. We're here to be of service. That's what we're excited to do. But then with that, what happens is that doulas burn out. I think the lifespan for a doula, the other day I heard 18 months. I would say it's like 2 to 5 years where doulas are able to be active, but they also are working like 9 to 5 jobs, sometimes maybe even a couple of jobs, specifically when you're looking at the doulas who have been operating as community-based doulas. So they're probably offering their services for low cost or no cost because, again, they're not out here seeking to make money. They're out here seeking to be of service and to support people. But sometimes when we do that, we kind of overdo it, and then we end up kind of neglecting ourselves right. in that. And then eventually, like, the pot just boils over. Mm-hmm. So I think there's always something new to learn about the work of doulas because there's so much that's unseen.
Yeah. What does this sustainability look like for doulas? I mean, it sounds like these are conversations that you're really starting to have as we're finding more people coming into this space.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah. So I'm excited and feeling full of hope for the sustainability of doulas. So right now we know that a lot of doulas are going through trainings through the UAMS Doula Expansion mm-hmm. Initiative with Ujima Maternity Network. So we're pushing out a lot of new baby doulas. And I always like to be very like vulnerable with people in telling them that I think those are going to be a lot of the doulas who are excited about taking part in medicated insurance reimbursement mm-hmm. because they're fresh on the streets. The doulas who have been doing this for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, they've already established their practices and they're pretty comfortable and successful where they are if they've lasted that long. And so when we talk about sustainability, I think DHS just released their responses to the public comments, and we're so mm-hmm. grateful for all of the work that DHS and ADH and our representatives and everybody has poured into this, because I think that is where Arkansas has been so surprisingly revolutionary mm-hmm. in this work. And I've had people seek us out from other states because they're like, hey, we've got our eyes on Arkansas yeah. because you guys are doing great things when it comes to doulas and maternal health care right now. So they just released that. And just as with anything, there were the wins and then there were some disappointments. So one of the disappointments is that the reimbursement rate is pretty low. It's under $1,000, and that's going to be 6 prenatal and or postpartum visits, plus the labor and delivery. And again, that's really hard on doulas because, I mean, labor and delivery on its own, we could be with a family for 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours. And the doulas want to be that pillar, but that is also where we can really like fizzle out because a tired doula is not an effective doula. So when we're looking at sustainability, we have to appropriately pay the doulas. We have to appropriately support the doulas. And that's what I'm looking to do when we're looking at, again, that administrative aspect, the billing, reimbursement, the paperwork, HIPAA compliancy. Sure. Like these are things that we have not had to be intentional with taking consideration mm-hmm. of that are going to be extra burdens on doulas. And there's been great efforts like UAMS. Hannah McHardy has worked really hard on the ADAPT toolkit mm-hmm. and, you know, really bringing in the Mercy Doula pilot projects. We got to help support that. And the Mercy staff was so excited about bringing in doulas, you know, walking doulas through their hospital, showing them like, this is what you have access to, you know, like really bringing them in as team members. But then I am really focused on getting those doulas in place in the community-based organizations, in the clinics that are already seeing these families. I would love to see doulas in the health departments. The CHWs have already been planted in some across the state. I think having doulas in place, just in those places where the families are already going for care initially.
The conversations that doulas have with, you know, other family members or support systems for these moms, what do those conversations look like? How long are they going to be part of the postpartum period? You know, what does that look like really?
Yeah, so I would say with postpartum doulas, you know, what does that timing look like? I'm going to speak to community-based doulas specifically in the Medicaid and insurance reimbursement and what we're looking at with that. So DHS initially pushed out the benefit and it was going to cover 4 prenatal visits and then 2 postpartum visits. And DAR advocated for us to maybe offer a little more flexibility with that, allow the families to decide how they want to use those visits mm-hmm. because you're not a mom unless you're telling everybody you're a mom, right? And so I'm a mom of 4. And so I remember my first pregnancy and really being worried about what's going to happen in the labor and delivery. So I would have loved those 4 prenatal visits. Mm-hmm. But as a 4th-time mom, I knew I was good at it.
Yeah.
What I knew I wasn't good at was the postpartum. And so those 2 postpartum visits, As a doula, that is postpartum follow-ups, but that's not postpartum care. I would have wanted 6 postpartum visits. And so with that, we advocated for them to offer that flexibility, and DHS was more than happy to make that change. So now there's 6 visits that families can decide when and how they want to use, and I think that's amazing. So when we're talking about a timeline, you have those 6 visits. Of course, with Medicaid, you only have the 60 days. I've seen doulas who work out as far as 12 months when you're talking about more private clients. Mm-hmm. I think the window is maybe a little shorter, typically like 6 months. Usually by 12 months, families are pretty well acclimated. And then as far as those conversations that I think people should be having more in the postpartum, I don't know that it's conversations. I think moms get talked at a lot. You get a lot of unnecessary advice that you didn't even ask for. I think what people can do better is just hold those moms. Mm. I am a true believer that when we hold moms, then the moms hold the babies. So if we support moms better, then those moms will better support their babies and their families. And I'm also a true believer that when that happens, we also see communities that are better supported. I think women have historically just been the pillars of making a community. And so when they feel adequately supported, they're going to pour into those babies who then become good people, but they're also going to pour into the world around their babies because we want our babies to have good villages. Sure. Yeah. So I think that's what we could do better. When you go to a postpartum mom's house, don't just be looking for the baby. Ask the mom how you can help her, what you can do for her. Have you eaten? When's the last time you ate? What did you eat? Let me wash you some fruit, you know? Sometimes even just assume. Get her a cup of water. Yeah. If she doesn't have a glass of water by her. And if she doesn't drink it, so be it. But I bet you at some point she'll be grateful that it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Ms. Watson, thank you for being here. I've really learned a lot. Thanks for your time.
Thank you again for having me.
Leah Watson is the executive director and a founding board member of the Doula Alliance of Arkansas. Ensuring moms have access to medical care during the postpartum period also means ensuring they have access to health insurance coverage. According to an analysis of birth records and claims included in the Arkansas All-Payer Claims Database, Medicaid financed 47% of Arkansas births in 2024. That's about 6% higher than the national average, but can vary greatly by county. In some Arkansas counties, Medicaid finances as much as 79% of births. In Arkansas, many of those moms will need to transition to other coverage 60 days after the birth of a child. And to better understand what those transitions look like, the policies surrounding them, and opportunities the state has to improve access to coverage for postpartum moms, I'm joined by Craig Wilson, President and CEO of the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. Craig, so great to see you in the studio. We have flipped seats for this podcast series. You're not used to being in the guest seat.
I'm not. I like being in control of the questions. So
you're on the other side now. This is fun. All right. So we want to start the conversation and lay a foundation. Craig, can you describe what the coverage landscape looks like for pregnant women in Arkansas today?
You know, for the most part, so an individual who comes in and is pregnant and seeks to enroll in Medicaid coverage, they're going to go into what has traditionally been known as the pregnancy eligibility category. And that roughly goes up to a little over 200% of the federal poverty level, which for a family of 2, let's say, is in the $40,000 range.
Okay.
If they're not pregnant when they come to enroll in Medicaid coverage and they meet income requirements for Medicaid expansion, which is 138% of the federal poverty level or below. So you're looking at roughly $30,000 for a family of 2.
Okay.
Okay. So below that, they can enroll in Medicaid expansion coverage if they're not pregnant at the time. They become pregnant, they maintain that coverage in that category so long as they meet income requirements. Outside of that, they might qualify for coverage through their workplace. They might qualify for individual coverage through the health insurance marketplace and be able to receive subsidies. But for the most part, as we know, roughly half the births are through Medicaid coverage. So most women at the time of coverage are going to be in that income range and be eligible for Medicaid coverage. So that is on the front end. On the back end of coverage, if they qualify for pregnancy eligibility coverage, that coverage ends at 60 days after the birth of the child. And so they might otherwise go without coverage after that point if they don't otherwise qualify for other coverage and are able to get enrolled in that coverage. And that's the critical piece. They might be eligible, but they might not go through the hoops to get enrolled in that coverage. That's one of the challenges that we face here in Arkansas for those women who, at the end of that 60 days, you know, they might otherwise qualify for some other Medicaid eligibility category. And I think the Department of Human Services has really focused a great deal on making sure that women who transition at that point and are otherwise qualified for a different category within Medicaid get transitioned. But the challenge is if they don't meet the income requirements for Medicaid, they're above that 138% of the federal poverty level, that becomes a challenge because they have to go into a different system. And there are different navigational points that they may have to overcome. And so that becomes a real challenge for coverage transition. I will say that the point for me, and I think, you know, the patients and the providers and the policymakers and for everyone, the real point is to not have a transition that results in a loss of care.
So that continuity of care.
Continuity of care.
And that's important.
Should be the ultimate goal, right? Regardless of the coverage piece, maintaining continuity of care is the ultimate goal.
And why is that important?
Because, you know, at 60 days beyond a birth, there are many, many things that can go wrong. This is the very reason that we as the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement sought to frame the whole policy inspiration here as the birthing journey. Because it is a true journey from preconception at least through the baby's first year of life. And there are many points at which not just continuity of care can be disrupted, but the mother's life generally and the baby's life can be disrupted. So framing that as the birthing journey through the first year of life was really important. And continuity of care was a critical piece of that, regardless of where the coverage for insurance happens.
And listeners, just a side note as well, that the birthing journey infographic that this entire series is based on was Craig's idea. So we'll give him a little shout out for that. Over the last few sessions, you know, lawmakers we've seen have put forth legislation extending postpartum Medicaid coverage, and, you know, they could again next year. What are some other policy options that we could explore to help ensure that, you know, these moms in our state continue to have coverage and access to care?
There are some great things that our policymakers have put in place with respect to doula coverage and community health worker coverage. But the policy-making process, it doesn't just happen under the dome, right? It extends through the development of regulations and reimbursement policy, and that is still ongoing. And making sure that we get those things in place that make community health workers effective and doulas effective in helping with these transitions, that's going to be really important. And so there's an extended policymaking process that happens and an evaluation process that should happen with respect to those policy developments that we still have to do. Second, we really need to make sure to go back to figuring out how to enroll women in Medicaid expansion coverage or any other Medicaid eligibility category before they become pregnant. I think we've got a long way to go in making sure that that happens, doing additional outreach and removing, you know, restrictions on marketing and advertisement for enrolling people in Medicaid coverage. I think that's going to be really important because you got to get them in before they become pregnant and, you know, make sure that they're getting the care that they need and the education that they need about preconception. Then a third, you know, probably an innovative thing that is an alternative to extending postpartum coverage beyond 60 days, which I think is the most streamlined way and most efficient way to maintain continuity of care and coverage. An alternative could be providing women in that pregnancy category with some monetary incentives to obtain and access prenatal care, do things that will improve outcomes during the pregnancy and following the pregnancy, and provide them with a little bit of a cushion to be able to then go and purchase coverage after that 60 days if they fall outside of Medicaid eligibility. You know, because there are challenges right now with the financial barriers for women in that postpartum coverage gap. Mm-hmm. You know, the enhanced tax credits through the marketplace have gone away, so there is a bigger financial barrier for them accessing coverage if they don't otherwise qualify for Medicaid. So providing them with a little bit of a financial cushion to help them get over that barrier and then move into the marketplace, I think would be another good idea.
And this is very much a patchwork of coverage options, right?
It is. And, you know, unfortunately, the way that American insurance coverage is designed, it is an absolute patchwork quilt.
Yeah. And there's complexity
there. There's absolute complexity. And it's even more complex in this particular demographic and at a time, unfortunately, where the focus for women and families in general is not on themselves. Mm-hmm. They're focused on the child,
right?
As they should be. Mm-hmm. And so they let their own health at times, they let their own needs go away. They focus elsewhere and they focus on the child. And that's a great thing. But we've got to help them navigate the system in a way that makes sure that they have that continuity of care, not just for themselves, but for the health of the child as well.
Greg, you've been doing this a long time. You have been in the health policy space for a long time. But as you are looking several years out, what do you feel are some of the greatest opportunities for our state to move the needle on maternal and infant health outcomes?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of focus on the coverage aspect. I would say there are some hidden challenges that have not quite surfaced to the extent that the coverage conversation has surfaced. One of which is the behavioral health challenges, mm-hmm. which you know, policymakers have started to address with preventive screening for depression in the prenatal and postpartum period. But I think there are some quality improvement efforts that could be done particularly in the postpartum period, in acute behavioral health conditions that occur and women showing up at the ER, yeah. Women showing up and being admitted mm-hmm. For behavioral health conditions, and the lack of follow-up that happens right after that. So connecting them with outpatient services and making sure that doesn't exacerbate.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The other thing is there hasn't really been a major focus on preconception. We still have a lot of challenges with unintentional pregnancy, and particularly in the teen birth space, although nationwide and in Arkansas, teen births have reduced significantly, but we still have one of the highest teen birth rates in the nation. So really having a focus on that, and the fact that we have a number of teens who not only get pregnant, but then have a second pregnancy while they're yeah. still teens.
The birth spacing.
Right. The okay. birth. I mean, mm-hmm. we've got you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds who by the time they're 17, they've had a second birth within a year and a half. About half of teens who are in that age range then have a second birth within a year and a half. And so those are opportunities, I think, when we need to intervene. And it's a clear opportunity for us to step in as a state, and not just, you know, from a policy intervention standpoint, but from, you know, a provider and patient education standpoint as well.
What do you think people that maybe are not as familiar about how the policy space works, what do you think they would maybe be surprised to learn about?
You know, policy in general, I always look at it, and this is, it's applicable in the housing space. It's applicable in the education space, many other spaces. There are trade-offs that happen. In the healthcare space, education space, housing space, it's about access, quality, and cost. And there are trade-offs that happen between those three things. And policymakers typically want to focus on the cost without addressing the other aspects that are in that triangle of access, quality, and cost. And you have to address all of those three things at the same time, or at least talk about the trade-offs that are going to happen. Because if you want to reduce the cost, or if you want to even maintain the cost in the medical space, which has a higher inflation rate over time, and you want to keep those costs stable, you're going to have an effect on the quality of care that gets provided, the level of benefits that get provided, the access that people have. And you can't ignore those things when you talk about costs without raising the costs, increasing the investment that you have in that space to even maintain the level of access and the level of quality that you have. So that's one aspect. I would say also that policymaking, it takes time. It's incremental. For the most part, it doesn't happen immediately. You have to have patience with it. And over time, you build education within policymakers, you build coalitions, you build messaging that can carry you over the hump.
And relationships.
Right.
I think that there have been a lot of good things that have happened over the last several years. You know, AKI has been part of those conversations. You've been part of many of those conversations and members of our team here. It's that relationship piece. Do you think that that really helps us in Arkansas to, you know, have good policy take shape?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have no authority to make anything happen. It's only with those partnerships, those relationships, that we're able to accomplish that with everyone else by our side. I would also say that we work in data. And data move, this is a, it's a common phrase, right? It's data move at the speed of trust. And so our trust and credibility that we've been able to build over time has been critical in building those relationships and working with partners to make change happen.
Craig Wilson is the president and CEO at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. He is a graduate of Lyon College in Batesville and earned his Juris Doctorate from Georgia State University College of Law. He holds a Master of Public Administration degree from the Georgia State University Andrew Young School of Policy Studies in Atlanta. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast. Coming up on our next episode, we'll move on to the ninth and final phase along the birthing journey, well child visits. Dr. Natalie Burr will join us to explore the role of regular well child visits in improving infant health outcomes in our state. We'll discuss policy options to support infant health and access to care with Anna Strong from the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Ashley Bearden with Arkansans for Improving Maternal Health will highlight child care and other economic challenges facing new moms. And then Kara Osborne with Ingeborg Initiatives will join us to share how they're sharing the successful efforts to improve maternal and infant health in Arkansas with other states around the nation. I hope you will join us. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The Healthy Birthing Journey podcast is produced by Joshua Cook at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. You can find more episodes, our infographic outlining the 9 points on a healthy birthing journey, and more analyses of maternal and infant health data in Arkansas on our website, achi.net. Thank you for listening.